Thanks for listening to Stokely and Zach On Demand. Before Zach tells us who is moonwalking in the Hall of Fame today, have you subscribed to our podcast? Subscribe everywhere you get your podcast or at 1043thefan.com.
It's Stokely and Zach on Denver Sports Station, 1043 The Fan.
Unless you've been hiding under a rock for the last 4 or 5 hours, you should be aware of the news that Teddy Bridgewater has been named the starting quarterback for the Denver Broncos. This is Chad Brown filling in for Zach Bye, the Stokely and Zach show. Stokely's on the other side of the glass behind a bunch of glass, so you really can't see your reflection very well over there. You drinking some milk, man? What is that? That's how hard it is to see through six layers of glass.
It's Gatorade Zero.
Okay.
It's not milk. Gatorade Zero.
All right.
Lemon lime Gatorade Zero, Chad.
All right. I thought that was milk and you were like keeping it old school or something.
No. Just had pizza and washing it down with Gatorade, not milk.
Lunch of champions, I see.
That's right. Yeah. That's right. Hey, you got to treat yourself every now and then.
How are you swinging them? How have you been playing this summer?
I've been playing really good.
Even
overall.
If you say so yourself, huh?
Right. I mean, overall, it's my best golf year in a long, long time. It's kind of starting to plateau, though, and I'm kind of starting to move back in the wrong direction. You have ups and downs. You know, I always do in golf. I mean, most people do. It's hard to be consistent. But right now, I'm kind of moving in the wrong direction. So I got to get it back fixed, Chad. You a golfer?
Not at all. Not at all. How many times a week do you play?
I try to get out twice a week, you know, during this time of year. Try to get out there twice. I love it, man. It's like, you know, it's hard to get that competitive itch, that competitive fix, you know, when you're mid-40s. But golf is that for me. You know,
right,
I go out there and compete, and every hole is a different challenge. Every day's, you know, presents different and unique challenges. So I love it.
I can totally understand why people love it. And I've played enough and been invited to tournaments and I've, you know, certainly swung them a few and yeah, I can hit it 300 yards. It doesn't always go straight or the way I want it to go.
Right.
So I understand how the game is played and I can see why people are just in love with it. And I can see the competitive part of it as well because you're competing against yourself. How can I stay mentally focused for 18 holes? And that's tough
it's
for me.
Hard.
At a tournament, after 9 holes, I'm like, man, we still got like 2.5 hours out here.
Yeah.
I want to go back inside and get some food and,
No, the great part is you're competing against yourself, but also you're competing against the guys you're playing against, you know? So it's like, it's a little bit twofold, you know? And it is. That's what you appreciate so much about professional golfers is mentally. The challenge of checking in for 18 holes and you realizing that one shot could cost you the tournament. And not just for one day. This is 4 days. One bad shot.
Right.
One bad mental lapse. Tournament gone. Hundreds of thousands of dollars could be gone just like that. So, those guys, it's impressive. And you think about Tiger and the run that he went on. Just mentally being able to check in and play at that level week in and week out is so difficult.
What's your best round this summer?
Best round this summer? Oh, high 70s. I think probably 78, 79.
Nice.
So I'm not a great golfer. It's not like it's 74. But I've got high 70s.
Compared to me, great.
Yeah.
Let's be clear about that.
makes me feel good. But compared to other people, you know, I'm average.
Okay.
Above average, maybe.
All right. Well, you know, I wish you luck next time you go out there and swing them.
Appreciate it, buddy.
Yeah. All right, so Teddy Bridgewater is the guy, and
yes.
Now becomes the next. There's always every time you open one door, you know, every time you close one door, there's another open. So we close the door on the competition. Now the door of possibilities is open. And what kind of possibilities does Teddy Bridgewater present to this team and to this organization? Is it playoffs or bust? Is it winning record or bust?
Well, first I got to give a shout out to one of your friends and my former. Partner here, CJ, chiming in, talking about golf. And, you know, his golf game leaves a lot to the imagination, just to say the least. But he is listening.
He talks a good game, I'm sure.
Oh,
of course
he does.
A great game.
So, he is listening. So, shout out to my guy, CJ. Always good to hear from him and see him. So, shout out to him. No, it's not playoffs or bust. Not for me. You know, Marilat's going to put that on him. Look, we got to understand where we've been around here. We've been in some dark days. You're talking about four straight losing seasons, 5 years without going to the playoffs. Now all of a sudden we're going to say, oh, it's playoffs or bust? I mean, come on, that's ridiculous. How about winning season? You know, if we could get to a winning season, I think that's awesome. I mean, that's a starter here. That lets me know that this roster's up to par, and, you know, I'm not counting on this quarterback. I'm not counting on Teddy Bridgewater to be here for the next 5 years. But at the same time, if we get competent quarterback play, and we get to 9 wins, 9-8, that would be, to me, would be a successful season, because it's been bad around here, Chad. And I think people forget that. Marilat forgets that. Like, sometimes you got to take a, you know, baby step, and that's not even a baby step. That's a big step there from 5 wins to, you know, nine wins and a winning record. What do you think?
I got to completely agree with that. 5 years in a row, no playoffs, 4 years in a row, losing record, to somehow just get onto the winning record side of things. I know there's the whole Super Bowl or bust mentality for folks like Marilat, but to move your program forward, to have guys on the roster, a majority of them on the roster, who will have experienced a winning record, that's not the case right now. So now you can have that, and they can know what a winning culture feels like. They can bring that confidence forward into the coming seasons. It's really hard to go from, you know, 5-11 to suddenly being a playoff team or Super Bowl or bust kind of team. You've got to take some steps in that process. So to use Teddy Bridgewater as the bridge, literally, Bridgewater being the bridge to that process, I think is the right way to go. The selection of him is the right guy to get that step done. And again, you can grow the young guys on this offense with an experienced quarterback, a guy who's been there before, who's been in these wars before, who's, you know, has a 5-0 streak under his belt with the New Orleans Saints. Those kind of experiences will relate directly to those young guys, and they'll be better off for it.
Yeah, and I think, you know, we'll take a step back and, you know, does Vic have to do this or do that to save his job? I think it should be pretty obvious to everyone at the end of the season. How did he manage the games? How did he coach his football team? How did he handle clock situations, timeouts, all those things? And I think for the most part, we'll be able to agree on Vic's future here. But it's hard for me to say he's got to make it to the playoffs, so we got to move on. We need some consistency at the coaching position. Right. Head coach, assistant coaches, all of that. That matters a lot. And certainly if it's, you know, Vic was lucky to get this year. But if he can bounce back and get to, you know, 9 wins, I think he's probably going to get another year, probably should get another year. But we'll see how it goes. We'll see how it goes. But with Teddy Bridgewater, for me, it's not playoffs or bust. I mean, to me, that's ridiculous. That's ridiculous. Like, who are we to say playoffs or bust? Right? I mean, like, what is it? It's not Peyton Manning playing quarterback here. We don't have John Elway playing quarterback here. I mean, we're trying to get to a winning record first. So let's slow the roll here on playoffs or bust. I think that's a little bit overhyped and ridiculous.
Matt Stafford becomes a quarterback here. Aaron Rodgers becomes a quarterback here. Then it's playoffs or bust. It's, yes, Teddy Bridgewater. I think, you know, again, no one's going to confuse Teddy Bridgewater with a top 10 quarterback in this league, but he's a guy with some experience, can have the consistency that these young players in the offense need, give Pat Shurmur a chance to fully implement his offense, a guy who understands the system, can play well within the system. There's a history with Pat and Teddy and George Payton going back to Minnesota. Everyone knows what they're getting and how they can use what they're getting to move this whole program forward. You did mention Vic Fangio. So coming up next, I want to get into Vic Fangio. Has he run out of excuses? Has George Payton armed him with enough defensively to move his defense forward? And does this quarterback situation literally give him no place to go but up? We'll get to that after the break.
Denver Sports Station, 104.3 The Fan presents Stokely and Zach.
Did Vic Fangio possibly wreck himself?
Oh, I see how you
with this decision here to go with Teddy Bridgewater. With this choice
Is he out? Can you break dance? Like, this little, is that a break dancing song right there? Like, did you, like, used to pop it to this?
Oh, yeah. I had a, you know, the cardboard taped to the garage floor. Uh-huh. No doubt about it.
Okay.
You know, the popping and locking wasn't my thing as much as the break dancing, spinning. I could do the head spin, the back spin,
spin on one hand. The head spin?
Oh, I was dope.
What?
I was dope. Oh,
like,
yeah.
Like, on your head, spinning around with your legs up in the air?
You know,
like,
those...
Yes. What?
You know, like the 80s swishy sweatsuits?
Yes.
You had one with a hood. You just pulled the hoodie on, man, and I could do my up rock and get down and do
really?
A head spin.
Wow.
You know,
any chance you could pull that off in 2021?
Man, I am 51 years old. I would be dizzy for about 6 weeks.
Okay, fair enough.
Yeah, that time of life is over, man.
Hey, trust me, I know. Every time I try to catch a ball now, I realize that. Like, oh, my gosh, what happened to my athleticism?
Father Time is undefeated, my friend.
Yes,
yeah, I mean, I can still do some stuff.
Right, but not
spinning,
to that degree.
No way, man. No way at all. All right, so Vic Fangio now. They bring in George Payton. George Payton does a great job shoring up the defense, particularly the secondary. There seems to be some health at the linebacker spot. There's a couple young guys who are emerging. There's some depth at the D-line. So the defense seems to be coming together. Now you've got a quarterback who can, at the very least, most likely do no harm. You've got a second-round running back who seems to be the real deal. The offensive line, guys like Garrett Bowles have matured. Is Vic Fangio, with this move to Teddy Bridgewater, beginning to run out of excuses now and kind of paint himself into a must-win corner?
Well, Vic Fangio was out of excuses regardless of who the quarterback was. That has no bearing. It doesn't matter. George Payton has done a great job of giving Vic Fangio a win-now football team. He has to win now, and George Payton has given him a good roster. So it didn't matter who he picked. If it was Teddy or Drew, he's got to win now. It's the NFL. There's no excuses here. There's no explanations. You know, you heard a lot of excuses last year. Injuries, and some of them were facts, right? I mean, sure. But it doesn't matter. What's your win-loss record? It doesn't matter how you get there. And so everybody's going to have injuries. Everybody's going to have tough things that go on that you just like, oh, my goodness, I can't believe this happened. You're going to face some adversity. So there's really no excuses, no explanations. Either you get the job done or you don't. And that's where Vic Fangio is in year three, and he's lucky he got year three. So I think for Vic, he knows there's no excuses. He's got to win football games. That's all that matters here. He's got to win football games, and it doesn't matter who the quarterback is.
You know, things are certainly stacking up on the right side for him. After going, 0-7 the last two Septembers, you've got what seemingly is a soft schedule to start the season. After, you know, an incredible run of injuries last year, you seem to have enough depth this year where you could withstand, probably not a similar type of run of injuries, but you can withstand some injuries. Your best player, we just heard Mark Schlereth, the reviews on Von Miller from practices and joint practices and things like that are that he's back to 2015 form, which it would be absolutely amazing if he can pull that off. So, yeah, I think it's always no excuses anyway within the NFL, but literally in this case, you have been equipped and armed with a roster, with some health, with some depth, that it's really up to you and your coaching staff and your ability to maximize what you guys have on the field, because it has to be done on the field, but on paper, this is most likely the best secondary in football. This should be easily a top 10 defense, possibly a top 5 defense. And your offense is now in the hands of a guy who can be steady, can be consistent, and I think will maximize the young playmakers and maximize their growth throughout this season. So at this point, what else is there other than for you and your staff to go out there and do an amazing job and, again, maximize those players? And, you know, make sure these guys live up to the paper potential and put it on the field.
Yeah, and now you have it. You know, we saw the offensive line last year and how much they improved. You have depth there. Jerry Jeudy and K.J. Hamler aren't rookies anymore. Melvin Gordon's first year isn't this year. It was last year. He's in his second year here now, not his first year, and had COVID miss it. Pat Shurmur. right, is going into his second year now. It's not, oh, well, Pat Shurmur didn't have time to put in his offense and they didn't have time to learn it and, you know, et cetera, et cetera. All those things are out the door now. Like, so it is like everything is pointing in the right direction for this football team to take a big step forward and for Vic Fangio to win more football games than he loses. And so he's set up in a really good situation this year. There's really no excuses. It didn't matter which quarterback he selected here. He's just got to go out there and win football games, and he's got a great opportunity to do it. You know, and so I think that's the great thing here is, you know, him and his staff do a good job. They should be a winning football team. And they that's not just like somebody looking at it through orange and blue glasses. You know, I mean, that's not how we do it here. But that's where I'm sitting right now. This team has got a really good roster. And now they have to, you know, go out there and do it on the football field. But you talk about maybe the best roster since, that 2016 team. You look at this roster from top to the bottom. They have an opportunity to have a good year. A solid year, and certainly Vic has, and his staff have to be a part of that. But Vic is in about as good of a situation as he could be in when a new general manager comes in here and he's really fighting for his job. George Payton has given Vic all that he needs to go out there and have a winning record and save his job.
Let's look at this maybe from the other side of what could possibly derail this season. You say, oh, you know, your quarterback gets hurt. Well, heck, you got two quarterbacks.
That's right.
You know, oh, what if we lose a corner? You got five of them on the roster.
Yep.
So what out there, and I'm not trying to jinx the Broncos by bringing this up, but can you see something that could derail things where we could see a 5-12 kind of season?
Well, I certainly hope not. I mean, you know, you injuries, you know, can always hurt your chances there, and really hurt your football team. If you have a couple at key positions that you just can't overcome. But that's part of it. You've got to figure out ways to overcome it then. Coach differently, game plan differently, and overcome, you know, the loss of certain guys. But sometimes you just can't do it. Hopefully that's not the case. You know, you look at Vic and his staff. How does Vic handle game situations? Is he using timeouts at the wrong time? Is he, you know, those types of things that cost the Broncos a couple times last year? He's got to be buttoned up on those things. And they got to go out there and do it. You know, I mean, NFL football games usually come down to the last quarter, the last 4, 5, 6 minutes. Do you make plays or do you not make plays? So we've seen a little bit too often here the last couple of years where the Broncos haven't made the plays when it mattered the most, right? Whether it's Von Miller hanging all over Jacoby Brissett and, you know, unfortunately coming away with a hand warmer, right? Which should be illegal, by the way. Why are you wearing a hand warmer when it's, you know, you're playing indoors and it's like 90 degrees in there? I mean, that should have been illegal to begin with. You know, letting Minshew drive down the field, letting Trubisky drive down the field. We've seen that too much, right? You got to close those games out. And that's the difference between, you know, 7 wins and 9 or 10 wins. So hopefully they can close games out better this year.
If Vic Fangio is still making the same clock management errors, game management errors here in year three, then this has got to be the end of Vic Fangio's time as the Broncos head coach. If you've developed players and the staff has given you players and you and your staff has grown those players, but you yourself as a coach have not grown and learned from your mistakes, that's a sad indictment upon you as a coach. So the clock management thing has to get figured out. You cannot lose games due to that this year. You are out of excuses as far as that goes for me. Coming up next, Stoke, I want to go back into what we touched on in that first segment, the disappointments in our career. Certainly this is a very disappointing day for Drew Locke. You and I, over the course of our combined 30 years in NFL, certainly have had our disappointments. I want to dive into that next.
You're listening to Stokely and Zach on Denver's Sports Station, 104.3 The Fan.
Welcome back into Stokely and Zach. I'm Chad Brown, taking the place of Zach By. Have we heard from Zach after his root canal? How's he feeling?
I mean, he spotted off on Twitter a little bit. I actually forgot that, you know, that's what he had. I thought he was just taking another vacation, but apparently he's...
Roby Day.
Yeah, apparently he's doing the morning shift or something, and he had the root canal. I don't know. I don't know if he made it out of that or not. You know, he doesn't have a high pain tolerance, Chad, between us two, keeping it real.
Basketball players, you know.
Yeah, exactly. You know, whether it's like a hamstring or like a little knee issue or an ankle, it always seems like something's bothering him. So he probably took the day off today. I don't know. I didn't listen to the morning show, but I wouldn't be surprised if he took today and tomorrow, maybe the whole rest of the week off after that root canal.
Okay. All right. Well, Zach, if you're listening, I'm hoping you're healing up quickly, even despite your partner's dissing your pain tolerance there.
What happens? You know, if you're not here, I'm going to I can take some shots if I got that opportunity. So I appreciate you teeing it up for me.
Well, you know, I know how you work.
I'm going to hit it out.
Yeah.
Bam. Love it.
Before the break, we got into a little bit about your and my career, you know, disappointing moments and how you bounce back. And I'm tying this to Drew Lock, and I'm sure it's a disappointing day for him. But, you know, guys who last in the league, guys who, you know, end up having successful long careers have to have the ability to bounce back.
Yes.
You know, we talked about this a little bit in the first segment. So since we've, you know, the topic has been out there for almost an hour and a half, hopefully you've had some time to go through your mental Rolodex, and you got a story or two to share with us about your grit, your toughness, your bounce back.
Well, I mean, for me personally, I got cut here 09 in training camp. Obviously, at the end of camp, last cutdown day, and being injured, that's not 2010. Excuse me, that wasn't ideal for me. Getting cut and released then, right at the end and still wanting to play football, but also being injured and trying to find a place to play, but also got to get healthy first. That was a tough time for me to have to go through. That was really the only time that I've I was cut was that year. And I felt like if I was healthy, I would have made the team. And so it's frustrating that you're injured. They cut you, you're on the street, and you're like, well, I want to play, but I got to get healthy. So you got to go to rehab and you got to try to get healthy as quick as possible. That time for me was really, really difficult. Because your brotherhood, the guys that you've been grinding with, you know, they're out there playing and you're just looking over there and you're saying, gosh, I want to be out there with them or playing football on Sundays, but I'm rehabbing. I got to try to get healthy first and foremost. And then hopefully somebody gives me an opportunity. So that was in 2010, McDaniel's second year. So that was difficult, you know, because you form a brotherhood. Those guys in that locker room, you know, it's fun. You love them like your brother, and all of a sudden, guess what? That's removed from your life. That's it. You're out. You know, you're out of, and all of a sudden they're moving on without you, and now you're just kind of at home with your family. You know, it's like, hi, babe. You know, like, yeah, I guess I'll take the kids to school today.
Right?
Yeah,
I've been there.
I guess I'll pick them up too. Yep. You know, it's like your whole world just changes like that. Mm-hmm. And so for me, yeah, that was really, really difficult time for me to try to fight through. And it ended up working out. You know, I ended up signing with Seattle after the third week of the season and stayed there the rest of the year and, you know, played well, went to the playoffs and just had a great time. So it worked out for me, but thank goodness. But that time that at like 3-4 weeks there was difficult. How about you?
I mean, I've been, you know, told the stories about my time in New England a number of times about being cut and, you know, how about, you know, the fourth or fifth time the formality of the process had completely disappeared and Bill Belichick's eating grapes out of a Gatorade cup as he cuts me. Chomp, chomp, you know, Chad, chomp, chomp, a couple more grapes. We got to let you go. We had some injuries. We need some speed on special teams. Eats a few more grapes. We're in the I'm not in his office. We're in the dining hall.
Wow.
And I'm being released. So by that point, I kind of knew, you know, what the situation was. I mean, that was the 07 team, you know, until we lost that Super Bowl, which would have been the greatest team of all time. So I was happy to be on that team at, you know, at 38 years old.
Sure.
You know, the fact that I'm even on this team was a privilege enough. But I'll go to year 13. I start the first 6 games of the year for the Patriots. I'm the leading tackler. But Teddy Bruschi, you know, the reason why I was brought in because Teddy had that hole in his heart.
Oh, yeah.
Had a stroke not too long after the Super Bowl the year before. So they were not sure where Teddy was going to be. So Teddy has started working out about 3 weeks into the season. And he has started practicing about 2 weeks before that. So come week seven, Teddy had practiced, had looked pretty good. You know, I was a leading tackler, but I wasn't playing great football. And overall, the Patriots defense wasn't playing great football either. And I wasn't being helped by the guys around me, but certainly, you know, I would have liked to have played better. But I get into the locker room, start getting dressed, and my position coach comes up to me and says, "They didn't tell you?" I'm like, "Who's they? You're my coach? Who's they? Who's supposed to tell me something?" "Yeah, we're gonna go with Teddy. So you're not gonna dress." Whoa. So I've gone from starting leading tackler to you aren't even dressing. And he says, "Well, you know, here, the inactive guys don't watch the game from the sideline. They watch it up in the booth." So I'm like, "Okay, sure." I literally.
Was this the day of the game or that was a week?
This was the morning of the game. Gotcha. I am in the locker room. I have put on my sweats to go on the field and do my warm up before I put my equipment on. I am in game mode. I have my cup of coffee at the hotel.
Yep, ready to go.
You know, I got my, in game playlist on my, on my headphones. It's all game day. So I'm like, "Whatever, man. I'm not watching the game from the dang press box. I'm going home." So I watched it from home, and I had a chance to stew about it all night. I don't think I slept a wink that night. Get to the locker room the next day. You know, there's 50 reporters around my locker. And literally, I stand up from my stool, and I'm still not quite sure what I'm going to say. And somebody throws out the question, you know, "How do you feel?" I'm upset. But I am a team guy. And I'm going to do whatever I can to help this team. That's what I'm going to do. And so I give the 5 or 10 minute press conference, and then I realize, okay, football for the first 12 years of my career has been about me. Now I get a chance to make it about the team. Because I used to leave the locker room in Pittsburgh upset after a win that I didn't get 2 sacks or I didn't lead the team in tackles. And I didn't take the proper joy in the team and winning as a team. And after that little mini press conference was over, I went to Belichick's office and said, "You know, I can see the handwriting on the wall here. Teddy's gonna be the guy, but I need to play a role on this team. You know, I'm fine. I'm 36 years old. Fine, put me on special teams." Well, fast forward a couple weeks later, I get the special teams game ball. And there is one game ball of all the game balls that I've had over all my career that is still on display is that one. Because it was about grit. It was about mental toughness. It was about, let me take the me out of this and put the team into this and do something for the team and not for me. It was about, you know, for 12 years, it was about personal accolades. And of course, I was on winning teams in Pittsburgh, so it wasn't all about personal accolades. But I want to make the Pro Bowl. I want to be all pro. I want a big contract. I want these things. And then get to the end of your career with the Patriots, and you realize, I just love playing this game. And if I can do something to help this team win, then that's where my happiness is going to come from. It can't be because I was a leading tackler anymore. Let me shift my focus and perspective a little bit. So, you know, hopefully Drew Lock, after some disappointing moments, and it's fine to be sad and disappointed, but you got to find a way to bounce back. Now, he can't go ask Vic Fangio to play special teams, but he can do something and be the best scout team quarterback possible.
Yeah, just grow and improve.
Yes.
But I love that story, Chad. That just, you know, and I think that's a hard thing to do for especially veteran players at that point in your career sometimes to take that step back and realize, okay, things have changed here. I need to change also and maybe take a different approach, a different view of things. But that was, I like that story. That was a great story.
Yeah. So hopefully Drew Lock, you know, yes, you got to hit rock bottom once and you got to find a way to bounce back up. And sometimes when your football mortality stares at you in the mirror, you gain a level of motivation that may have not been there before. Coming up next, we're going to talk to Denver 7's Troy Rank and get his take on the quarterback decision.
It's Stokely and Zach on Denver Sports Station 104.3.
Stoke, Broncos are back at practice today, preparing for the Rams this weekend. This voice you're hearing, this is Chad Brown. This is not Zach By. Zach was doing the morning show, we think, after his root canal yesterday. We are awaiting Troy Rank, but in the meantime, Stoke, you think much can be accomplished this weekend's game against the Rams?
No, not a whole lot. I would tread lightly and be very cautious and take the cautious approach here. You know, we talked about what's on the line for Vic this year. We talked about the injuries last year and how it impacted this football team. You got to be careful not to get guys hurt when it doesn't matter, when games are meaningless. You want to get guys playing and get them ready to go. But certain guys, I just think the risk-reward here is just too great. And I would be very, very cautious with my approach with a lot of these guys. And just get ready to play football now. They've been pretty fortunate throughout camp. Haven't had any major injuries. So I would be very cautious with my approach to this last preseason game and try to keep everybody healthy heading into the regular season. And that would be my approach.
All right. We got Troy Rank, our Denver 7 Broncos insider. He joins us now courtesy of ROX Heating and Air. That's ROX, ROX Heating and Air. Hey, Troy, how you doing, buddy?
Good, guys. How are you?
Good. Of course, we have to talk about the news of the day off the bat. Your take on the quarterback decision.
Yeah, I mean, it was a close competition. There's no doubt. I felt like when I was in Seattle, when I watched Teddy convert 3 4th downs and have a signature 16-play drive that include, you know, nuanced progressions and stepping up in the pocket and dump downs that it kept the sticks moving, I remember turning in the press box and saying that was his moment. Like, if he wins this competition, I think that's the moment you're going to point to, and I think he just did win it. And it is more nuanced than the games, but even in the games, he was 16 of 19, and one of his passes was dropped by Javonte Williams. So I wasn't surprised. Is Drew's job to lose going to Seattle, and I thought Teddy won it. It was that simple, that he just passed him just barely, and he wins it. I do think both guys are going to play, and they're going to need both guys to get a winning record and to get back to the playoffs for the first time since Super Bowl 50. But I was not surprised Teddy won it, even though it was a spirited and close competition.
Troy, now that we know who the starter is, what's your expectations for this Broncos team?
I mean, it's the same because I felt like I predicted before camp Teddy would win it. I felt like they need to get off to a good start in September so there would be a little more trust in him because of his experience. And that's unfortunate for Drew, but his past does matter. And this coaching staff had him with the turnovers. And so I felt they were a 9-win team before the season. That was my prediction, and that's where I'm at now. I do think this defense has a chance to be special. And if they do take care of the ball, they could certainly be in the playoff mix. They're going to obviously have to get to 10 or 11 for that to happen. But my expectation is winning record 9-8, and then hopefully it's better than that. But that's my expectation.
All right, Troy, they got the second practice of the week today, and then playing the Rams this weekend. What should we expect from this weekend's actions? Are they going to be all threes out there? Are some of the twos going to play? Is there still anything up for grabs from a competitive standpoint?
Well, you're going to see Cortland Sutton, Von Miller, and Melvin Gordon play. That is the plan, is to get them in the game a little bit because Sutton wants to get through the mental hurdle of playing in a game before the opener. And frankly, he needs it because he looks closer to Bradley Chubb last year where he's still kind of working back into form and going through some final checkpoints here. You know, Gordon, does he need the snaps? Not necessarily, but I'd like to see it if they deem it worthy. And I know Vaughn wants to play in a game before the opener. And so those three are of merit. But what's up for grabs? I mean, it's really last roster spot, special team issues. Can Nate Hairston win, like, the final cornerback spot? Are they going to keep 6 or 7 receivers? Is, you know, Trinity Benson competing with Tyree Cleveland to win a job? Are they both going to be able to make the team, depending on how that all shakes out? But there's not a lot of tough decisions. I don't think you're going to see any surprise cuts. And to answer your question, Chad, yes, it will be mostly twos and threes playing.
Troy, One guy I'm a little concerned about here is Courtland Sutton. You know, he's practiced sporadically throughout camp, hasn't done every drill. I don't know what's happened here this week and what they have done with him at practice, but I'm a little bit concerned. Can he play 50 or 60 plays? Do you think they take him along slowly here early in the season, and maybe he's more of a rotational guy than a starter, or do you think he's going to be that every down starter again like we've seen from him in the past?
Yeah, I mean, you should trust your eyes because you're seeing the same thing I am, and you've played the position, so you know. I don't think he's ready for that workload yet. Now, again, if he goes out and plays two series against the Rams and he gets hit, he gets tackled, maybe he has kind of that mental breakthrough, but he isn't trusting it yet in practice consistently. He had, for me, two really good practices, one day where he caught like five passes for over 100 yards, but he hasn't been that consistently, and that's why I agree with you. I don't see any way that he would be logging, you know, 90% of the snaps on opening night. I think it would be closer to, you know, 70%. And it's also, when people ask me about the quarterback position, because of that, and because I don't think Sutton's going to be in full form until probably October 1st, more likely, Jerry Jeudy has a connection with Teddy Bridgewater. Drew Lock, for whatever reason, has not. For last year plus this camp, they just haven't clicked. Doesn't mean they couldn't with more reps together, but they haven't. And that's why with Bridgewater starting, I think you got to look that they're going to lean heavily on Jerry Jeudy early in the season as they work Sutton back into form.
Okay, so if Courtland Sutton is going to play this weekend, perhaps a series or two, who's throwing him the ball? Does Drew Lock go out there and play quarterback? And what if Drew Lock lights it up? Is it Brett Rippon? And does Brett Rippon really help Courtland Sutton take the rust off? If he's going to play, that brings up who's going to be the quarterback. That's a bit of an odd situation for me.
Well, I think it'll be Drew Lock. I think they want to play the guy who's not starting. And that's part of the reason they made the announcement today, is because the starter's not going to play in the game. I think you're going to see, this is my prediction. We haven't heard from Coach Fangio, but I've been talking to sources and kind of piecing it together. I'm expecting, again, haven't been told this exactly, that Lock would then play some and then Rippon would come in, that Rippon wouldn't play the entire game. That could change. But to answer your question specifically, Chad, I would expect if we see Melvin Gordon and we see Courtland Sutton that the quarterback with them would be Drew Lock because he's the backup now.
Troy Rank, last one for me, Troy. How do you think they handle the running back position this year? Melvin Gordon hadn't played in the first two preseason games. Devontae Williams has looked really good. How do you think they handle those two this year?
Well, it's Gordon's job to begin unless he puts the ball on the ground. And that's the one thing Gordon's done. Only Zeke Elliott's had more fumbles since the two entered the league than Melvin Gordon. And that's something he's got to fix, because part of the reason Drew Lock probably doesn't win the job is because of the turnovers. They get spooked by him. So Melvin Gordon, it's his job. I think they're going to ride him heavily, but he's got to keep the ball off the ground, because you've seen what this kid can do in Javonte Williams. And Williams is more advanced than most young guys in terms of pass pro. He had a drop pass in terms of catching the ball against Seattle, but for the most part, he's been solid in that area in training camp. And let's be honest, running back's the one position where you see rookies make an impact all the time, because it's almost mutually exclusive of the team in some ways. It's not linked to seven other parts. It's just hand the ball and run, and if you can do that, you still have a role. But it's Melvin Gordon, and Gordon finished strong. He looks great. We haven't seen much of him lately. So, the glass half full says that'll mean he's fresh and ready to roll on opening night, because they're going to need him.
Yep.
No matter whether it was Drew Lock or Teddy Bridgewater, and Mark, you had Mark Schlereth on, I've said that for weeks, if not months. Stop looking at the quarterback as the reason they need to win games. They need the quarterback to throw 25 times a game, not 35. When they throw more than 30 times a game, I think my number was 3-17 the last 2 years, they're not built to pass like that. That's not who they are. We know how that movie ends. It's with Thelma and Louise going off the cliff. Mm. So run the football. Establish the run. Then go play action. There's going to be games you get behind. Yeah, you end up throwing a lot. But that shouldn't be the priority. Is let's go three wide and sling it around the yard. Why? That's not the strength of this team. So I just say, look at the run game as the identity of the team. If they're going to have a winning record, they need to finish the season as a top 10 rushing team. Last year they were 13th at 119 a game. They need to be about 125 to 130 a game on the ground to get where they want to go.
Good stuff, Troy. Certainly appreciate it. Thanks, my man.
You got it, Chad. Take care, Brendan.
Thanks, Troy.
All right, that was Troy Rank, courtesy of Rocks Heating and Air. That's Rocks Heating and Air. I like your question about the running backs. And talking to Pat Shurmur about Javonte Williams, you know, you and I know this from, you know, our experience in the league. What limits the ability for running backs to make an impact early is their ability to pass block.
Yeah.
And Pat Shurmur said he just has a great instinct for it. And as much as we have praised Teddy Bridgewater for that fourth and fifth play where he climbed the pocket, he got a key block from Javonte Williams on that play. So I think Pat Shurmur's, you know, feel for Javonte and his instinct for pass blocking, and certainly I think he's a big enough, physical enough, strong enough guy to handle most linebackers in the league. He's not going to be limited by that. So his ability to get on the field will be about him running the ball, not his inability to pass block.
Yeah, I think that's you know, a great point. Young backs, they have to learn protections. They have to learn who to block. You can't have a linebacker coming free when that guy's supposed to be picked up and hitting your quarterback in the mouth. So that's a big part of it, getting on the football field and getting and gaining the coach's trust. And right there, you know, that fourth down play, Javonte Williams drills the guy, picks up the right guy. Teddy's able to climb the pocket and complete that ball to Jerry Jeudy. First down, that's huge. What does that do for Javonte Williams? All of a sudden, the coaches look at him now, okay, we can trust him. We can trust him a little bit more each and every time that he's able to go out and do something like that. But certainly for a young back to be able to step up in that moment and be able to, you know, pick up that protection and keep Teddy Bridgewater upright and not get hit, I think for him that coaches look at it and say, okay, we can trust you a little bit more now, just like you can trust me to say KKFN and KKFN HD1 Longmont Denver when it's time to deliver, I deliver, like Javonte Williams delivered. Chad?
I heard you trying to stretch your answer
out. Were you
out
ready? Were you ready for it today?
To 158, and I was like, oh, he's going to stretch his answer out so he can get the legal
pro,
ID.
I'm a pro, Chad.
You got the legal ID in and wear it very well there, my friend. You did it great. I looked at the clock. I was like, oh, man, he's going to keep going. That was good. That was well played. You are a pro. I will give you a tip of the cap for that.
But, no, seriously, though, I think, look, that is, you made a great point. That's one of the reasons why young backs can't get on the football field. But they can be cautious with him. They don't have to push him, rush him out there. You know, he's not a top 10 pick. And he's got Melvin Gordon in front of him. And I like, and I want to get your thoughts on this, I like the fact that Melvin Gordon hadn't played the first two games. He knows this offense. He's a pro. Running backs get banged up enough. I don't need to see him in the first two games. If he plays this game, fine. He looks like he's in great shape. I can't wait to watch him play. I think he should be more comfortable in this offense. But he looks great. I don't really need to see him carry the football in a meaningless preseason game. Now, if you want to give him one series, okay, I guess, but I have no issues with if Melvin Gordon doesn't play one down this preseason.
Okay, well, Troy said not just Melvin Gordon, but Courtland Sutton and Von Miller.
Yeah.
You know, I think you are on the side of, hey, there's not much to be gained by playing those guys in this last preseason game. The Rams aren't going to play anybody. The Rams don't play anybody in the preseason at all. That's just not what they do as an organization. So it's not like those guys are going to be going against top flight competition. Is there something to be gained for those three guys to get a series or two in this weekend?
Well, I mean, for me, I always like to, you know, play a little football before it was real football. You know, I wanted to play a little bit, not a lot, a little bit, right?
Not a lot.
Yeah, just let me run a few routes, you know, get the butterflies out, maybe catch a ball, get hit once, and then I'm good. But, you know, at a certain point, you know, when it got to a certain age, it's like, okay, I really don't need it. Like, this is what I do. This is who I am. I'm in year 10. I mean, I feel like I can roll out of bed and get open in the NFL. That was my mindset, right? I don't need to go out there in a preseason game. I can do that stuff in practice. So I get it. Different people have different thoughts and views of it. Even players do. So, I just would be really cautious because you're so close to the season and, you know, you're talking about three guys that you really need to have good years this year. You know, if I get them out there, I'm getting them out there and I'm getting them out of the game really quickly. Well, I mean, what are your thoughts on it overall? How'd you feel about it?
I think Melvin Gordon, because he didn't end the year injured last year, played probably the guy who needs the least reps. And from a practice perspective, you know, other than the actual contact to the ground, playing running back gets to do most of the things you would do in a game. Running routes, running through holes, reading the blocks, things like that, except for the physical part. For Von Miller, taking on the tight end, taking on an offensive tackle, rushing, bending the edge, feeling how it's going to feel to go against a running back when you tap dance, you try to stab him in the chest with the long arm. You may not get an opportunity to do all those things in practice, so that could be good for a guy who missed all of last year just to work a little bit of that rust off and get some of that true timing. It's hard to get the true timing of a game speed in practice. The first couple of days of training camp for me, I would put my hand between, my helmet and someone else's helmet and smash my hands. Just didn't have all the placement down. It took a little bit to get that back. And then the ramp up of speed during the preseason was important for me as well. But for Von Miller and Courtland Sutton coming off of injury, I think to just go out there and experience the speed of the game when they missed a whole year essentially last year for both those guys, I would try to get them a series or two, but somehow try to do it in a way that keeps them out of harm's way. How can we get you the speed and tempo of the game, but you don't have anything bad happen to you? That's what I would be hoping for.
Yeah, and the one guy you just can't afford anything to happen to, I mean, look, you don't want an injury to happen to any of those guys, but, when you look at Melvin Gordon, Von Miller, it's Von Miller.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, Melvin Gordon, hey, all right, yeah, I think he's going to have a really good year, and I can't wait to see it. But you got Javonte Williams back there, right? And Royce Freeman's done a pretty good job also, and Mike Boone will be coming back. But Von Miller is irreplaceable.
Yeah.
I mean, he just is. So that's the one that concerns me the most. But certainly you want to get out there and maybe knock a little rust off. Like you said, he didn't play at all last year. I get it and I understand it. But at the same time, look, if he's a little rusty in the first quarter against the Giants, okay, I'll take it. But running backs need to get tackled. They need to try to break tackles. Outside linebackers need to try to tackle and bring guys to the ground, work on their moves. There's no right or wrong answer there. But I think, personally, the more I look at this thing, the more I think about it, I just would be very cautious. And that would kind of be the Rams approach. They're very cautious with how they go about preseason. The Saints game spooked me the other night.
Mm-hmm.
You're looking at the Saints Jags game, first round pick Travis Etienne goes out. He's out for the year. Liz Frank surgery on his foot. Saints lose two tight ends. Our former guy here, Nick Vinette's out, 2 to 4 weeks. And it's just like, oh my goodness, look at all these guys dropping. And, some of these guys, you might not be talking about frontline starters, but you're talking about depth guys, special teams guys, guys that will contribute to help you win football games. And so that adds up. By the way, we haven't even started real football. So, it's tough, man. It's tough. I don't think there's a right or wrong answer, but, for me, it's the cautious approach is what I would take.
For me as a player, I liked getting, my snaps in the preseason. I would have been really uncomfortable going into the regular season, not gotten any preseason snaps for me as a player. But I recognize, that was a long time ago.
Yeah.
I'm 51 years old. The NFL has changed. The league has changed. And in some ways, the first two regular season games are kind of an extension of the preseason with so many teams keeping most of their starters out. So you're not going against somebody who's, really at, some kind of November, December level of speed and continuity. Everyone's kind of rounding their way into form those first couple of weeks. So, yeah, I see the value in getting some reps, but I also understand the fear and concern. So for, guys who are going to be as important to this team as Melvin Gordon, Von Miller, and Courtland Sutton, taking the more cautious approach.
Yeah, and I think that's a great point that you bring up there, Chad. A lot of teams are taking this approach now. So guess what? Everybody's a little bit rusty early on. Whereas back in, maybe our day or whatever you want to call it. I mean, preseason was like, okay, we're getting after it. We're getting ready to go. And if an injury happens, I guess teams are probably a little bit more ready to start playing real football early on as a whole. But now there's so many coaches that look at it and just want to be cautious with it that, a lot of these guys are going to be rusty. So, it doesn't hurt you as much now to be rusty as it maybe did 15 years ago. I like that. I think there's something to be said about that, and that's real.
I think it's real, no doubt. And my internship experiences showed me that, you know, practice, the tempo of practice to go throughout an entire training camp and not have any live tackling drills.
No goal line? I mean, come on.
Yeah, I mean, we did goal line and short yardage twice a week in Pittsburgh for my first 4 years there, and they were absolute butt baths.
Oh.
And it was ones-on-one. So it's Hall of Fame center Damani Dawson. You know, the ball's being handed off to Hall of Fame running back Jerome Bettis, and it's me and LaVon Kirkland and Greg Lloyd and Kevin Green
wow.
trying to tackle the future Hall of Famer. Twice a week we did that. Once a week, we took a yellow school bus to Latrobe High School and did short yardage and goal line under the lights.
How cool is that?
I mean, so it's such a, you know, Pittsburgh traditional, right. you know, old school football experience. And I think they still do that now with the Steelers, but I don't think they do it twice a week. And it's probably not for 25 snaps like we used to do it back in my day. So Mike Tomlin's old school, but he ain't that right. much old school.
He's still, you know, his approach is a little bit more aggressive than a lot of these coaches nowadays. You know, he's about getting his team ready to play week one, the physicality of training camp and being ready for the physical football. And that's how he approaches training camp. And that's the way he's always been, maybe not quite to the degree of what you were talking about, but you know, you saw Big Ben playing a lot of football. You saw Juju Smith-Schuster playing a lot of football.
Najee Harris.
Yeah, just last week. And so into the second quarter. So he takes a little bit of a old school approach there in Pittsburgh still, but a lot of these coaches now are more new school and taking that cautious approach because they realize you can't win without the Jimmys and the Joes. You got to have some dudes. You can't lose your stars. If you lose your stars, you got no chance. None. Zero. And if you lose them in meaningless games, it just hurts that much more.
You know, we got a couple minutes before we got to head to the next break, but I wanted to just get your take on this secondary. They're talking about it being, you know, no-fly zone 2.0. Obviously, you know, conversation about possibly being the best secondary in all of football. From a receiver standpoint, when you look at a secondary as stacked as this one is, what do you do offensively to combat that?
Well, I hope to run the football. You know, establish the run.
Uh-huh.
And then that slows down the pass rushers, you know. And if you can slow down the pass rushers, maybe you have a little bit more time to get open down the football field. So that would be my game plan against the Denver Broncos is try to establish a run and get the running game going and for us as an offense to control the tempo. Sometimes that's easier said than done. But, you know, you look at the secondary and they have it all. You know, the flexibility for guys to play inside, outside. You can drop maybe put Sertan in at a linebacker spot, put Kareem Jackson in a linebacker spot on passing situations, Justin Simmons in the line. I mean, you just have a little bit of everything there, and that's what makes it so difficult. You have guys that can play inside. You have guys that can play outside. You have good safeties, obviously. So it should be, you know, at the bare minimum, a top three, if not the best secondary in the league. I mean, you look at it, what is their weakness? There is no weakness there. You just hope that, you know, Darby can stay healthy. That's been a concern there. You hope that Fuller gets back to maybe his form, and you hope Sertan lives up to the expectations and what we've seen from him during training camp. But they got to actually go out there and do it. You know, I've been optimistic about this defense for years now, and they just haven't lived up to that. So they got to go out there and do it. But, man, this secondary, I mean, you look at it on paper, it doesn't get much better than what they have.
I'll just ditto all of that. I think these guys are on paper a tremendous group. They have to get it done on the field, but there's no weakness. So often, you know, from an offensive standpoint, offensive coaches want to find the weak fish.
That's right.
Who's the weak fish? We can attack the weak fish. There isn't one out there. You know, you've got nickel, you've got outside guys, you've got slot guys, you've got safeties who can cover tight ends. So there's no obvious place to go with your line of attack. That makes that group very, very difficult to have some success against. This quarterback decision is not just between the two quarterbacks. There is a ripple effect to these kind of things, and that ripple effect goes throughout the locker room. Coming up next, we'll talk about that.
Miss any of Stokely and Zach? Make sure to subscribe to our on-demand podcast. You'll get every episode as soon as they're released. Just subscribe wherever you get your podcasts or at 1043thefan.com.